Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. April 1st marks the start of a transition period, dubbed as the transition to endemicity phase, in which the government's public health policies will move away from blanket restrictions towards specific interventions and public guidance. But after 2 years of living with the many necessary restrictions, are public health authorities and citizens prepared for the transition to live with and to manage the virus? Our guest on the show is Dr. Milton Lam. He is the past president of the Federation of Private Medical Associations and the Malaysian Medical Association. Dr. Lam, thank you for joining us on the show. In this transition to endemicity, the government has put the benchmark of fewer than 1,000 COVID cases daily for the disease to be considered or to be declared endemic in Malaysia. I'm just wondering about this number, about this benchmark of 1,000 cases. What do you make of it? Is it scientifically backed? Is there a medical thinking behind it, or is it an arbitrary benchmark of 1,000 cases?
I think, first of all, we have to be clear what we mean. The two misused words in this pandemic are herd immunity and endemicity. Herd immunity, can I just say, refers to a situation in which there is a sufficient number of residents in Malaysia who are immune to an infectious disease. Whether they got it through infection or through immunization, to make it spread from person to person unlikely. Now, even individuals who are not vaccinated, like newborns, those with chronic diseases who cannot be vaccinated because of their medical condition, are offered some degree of protection because that infectious disease has little opportunity to spread within the community. Now, come on to endemicity. Endemicity essentially means that the presence of an infectious disease in a given area is at a very low or baseline level. Now, for COVID to be classified as endemic, it has to be accepted that it is an infection that is always present in the population, just like dengue and malaria, or other respiratory tract infections, like the common cold, influenza, and in children, respiratory syncytial virus infections. Endemicity does not mean that there are no cases. I think that has to be made very clear to the population, or that COVID-19 is harmless. Unfortunately, we do not have that message coming across. Now, we look at the current data to answer your question, Melissa. Malaysia exceeded 4 million reported cases on the 21st of March. We rank number 23 in the world. Our position in November 2020 was 86. So we have moved up the ladder in terms of number of cases. We exceeded a cumulative reported deaths of 34,000 on the 16th of March. And we have the highest death rate per capita in the whole of ASEAN, almost double that of Indonesia, our neighbor. WHO uses a positivity rate of 5% to say that you are testing enough. The last time we had a positivity rate of less than 5% was on the 1st of February. And since the 20th of February, it has exceeded 10%. I think yesterday it was about 13, 14%. So it's always hovered around that. So the point to be made is the numbers that are given out daily do not reflect the true prevalence of COVID-19 in the population because we are not testing enough. And now we have Omicron, which spreads much faster than Delta. You need to test enough so that you know what is the scale of the problem. If you don't test enough, you wouldn't know what is the scale of the problem. Now, I'm just referring to the test that we all do, the rapid test, as well as a PCR test in certain instances. In terms of genomic testing, we rank behind many of the other countries in ASEAN. So, how do we measure when we are endemic? The government has quoted a figure of 1,000 cases a day. But if you don't test enough, do you think you can achieve that number? I can report 0 cases tomorrow if I don't test anything today. So where did that 1,000 come from? I think as a healthcare professional, I would like to know what is the 1,000 cases per day based on?
Dr. Lam, if I can ask you, if for government, the considerations are not simply about the disease, they're about the trade-offs that have to be made on the economy, on society, you know, education, right. And so on. So that these numbers are arbitrary to the extent that, as you put it, I mean, they're a function of how the integrity of our testing system. But is there logic in them in this decision to relax restrictions because of the long-term economic and social impact of those restrictions so far?
If you look at restrictions, there is also a medium to long-term impact of infections that deprives a significant percentage of the population from getting to work or from being able to work. They have to go off on leave to be quarantined and all that sort of thing. So striking a balance is something that is necessary. I've always felt since the beginning of the pandemic that we shouldn't have had the strict restrictions that we had instituted. We tried to follow China, but China has having a lot of problems today, and I'll come to that in a little while. But, you know, zero COVID strategy was something that we had an opportunity right at the beginning of the pandemic, or even soon after that. But the mistakes started coming in on or about the time of the Sabah elections. And if you look at the curves of the reported cases and reported deaths from September 2020 onwards, you find that the numbers just keep on going up.
Right. So Dr. Lam, when you mentioned all the kind of worrying statistics, from what I understand, you're trying to say that perhaps now is too soon for us to be transitioning to an endemic stage. Is that what you are trying to say? What are you most concerned about as the country is looking to kind of ease restrictions in this way?
You know, the numbers reported yesterday was 13,000, okay, for yesterday. And 2 days ago, it was 21,000. So now, if you're not testing enough, the true numbers will be much higher. I think we have to go on a regional basis or a state basis in making such decisions. I don't think we can just make a decision just for the whole country in terms of lifting restrictions. Simply because in certain states, the healthcare facilities and the healthcare professionals are not on the same numbers or strength as that of other states. Take Kelantan, Kedah, Perlis, Sabah, and Sarawak, for instance. They are states where there are few general hospitals, relatively few healthcare professionals compared to the urban states of Selangor, Penang, and Johor. So if restrictions are to be lifted, my personal view is that it should be done on a state-by-state basis, taking into consideration what healthcare facilities you have, what healthcare personnel you have, and whether they can cope with numbers of cases. Now, what is great for the goose is may not be great for the gander. You know? I think that is pretty specific. If you look at what the US is doing, and I think they've done a lot of things wrong in the US, but at least the CDC now comes along with a guideline and say, okay, for this state, the risk of getting COVID is this number. The risk is low, or medium, or high. And then it goes down to the counties. We can do a similar thing here in Malaysia, whether we go by state or whether we go by mukims or parliamentary constituencies. Now, you can come around with the argument that it's difficult to do so. You have technology to assist you in that way. You know where the cases are. The ministry knows where the cases are. And they can say to us, okay, in Kuala Lumpur, we can lift restrictions. In Klang, maybe you don't lift all the restrictions, for example. In Kota Baru, maybe we have more restrictions, for example. I'm just giving you examples.
Yeah, Dr. Lam, I understand what you're saying. Very quickly, before we go to the break, I want to ask you if enough has been done to level up the different regions of the country. You noted the unevenness in terms of healthcare provisions. Has enough been done? It's been 2 years.
Well, we had hoped that in the 2022 budget, the government would have expended much more money on healthcare to take care of the, not the gaps, but the chasms in the public healthcare system that COVID-19 revealed. But you look at the 22 budget, the amount budgeted for is not much more than the year before. COVID-19 was the worst public health disaster in Malaysia, and it exposed not just gaps, but chasms in the public healthcare system. In the Klang Valley, it really floundered in June, July last year, where if you had been working in some of the hospitals, you would have really felt, you know, what is, as if the world was dropping down on you. And don't forget, many of the healthcare staff today, even though they have been vaccinated, are getting COVID because of the Omicron variant. So you take away the healthcare staff, you're going to have fewer healthcare staff looking after patients.
Right.
And the quality and safety of care would be affected.
Dr. Lam, we're going to take a quick break, but let's come back and continue this conversation in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned to Consider This. Hello, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Let's continue our conversation with Dr. Milton Lam. He is the past president of the Federation of Private Medical Associations, as well as the Malaysian Medical Association. We are discussing the transition to endemicity phase, which kicks off on April 1st. Dr. Lam, I want to ask you about the mindset shift that is required for this transition period. What distinction should be made between, say, personal choices and public policy, specifically around the prevention or the mitigation of risk of COVID-19. I'm thinking about, you know, how do we get people to still comply with, say, wearing a mask mandate if there isn't, wearing a mask if there isn't a mandate, you know, voluntarily self-isolating if they are positive or they have symptoms. What should be the considerations for not just government, but society as well?
Let me just say, there's no absolute personal choice. Personal choice depends on personal rights, and no personal right is absolute. Just as a person has a right not to use a mask, his neighbor, whoever it may be, has a right not to get infected from the person who's not using the mask. What has not been done sufficiently is to emphasize non-pharmaceutical interventions. A lot of reliance has been placed on vaccination, and we have done well as far as vaccinations are concerned, okay? But vaccination is just one tool in addressing COVID. We need mask wearing, we need physical distancing, frequent hand washing, not touching your face or nose without having washed your hands. That message has not come across often enough in the media. I think radio and television Malaysia can do better. Okay, I see the message on some billboards of some corporate entities. But I think the message to get across to the masses must be made by the government media, which is accessible to everybody. Now, that message has not come across. We are told that vaccination rates are high, and it appears that a lot of reliance is placed on vaccination. But if you want to truly address COVID, you have to use several measures.
Dr. Lam, I can ask you about, you know, who's been most affected by the disease. In the early days, the statistics suggest...
I'm coming to that.
Yeah, could you help us understand?
I think, you know, one of the issues that I raised very early on in the pandemic was the fact that 3 to 4 in Malaysians are at risk of severe disease or even death. The reason I raised that was simply because 30% over of our population has hypertension, 20% over has got diabetes. And if you look at the deaths, when the Ministry of Health was initially giving the causes of deaths, apart from age of the patients, most of those patients who died had comorbidities: diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, and heart conditions. Just 4 would have accounted for about 80% of those deaths, 80-90% of those deaths. But since the ministry stopped giving those data, we do not know what is the current situation. But what is disturbing is that about 1/5 of people who die are brought in dead. And according to the Minister of Health, 91 or 92% of them don't even know that they got COVID. Now, is it because they were not informed about the condition? Is it because they thought that they had difficulty accessing testing kit? You know, not everybody can afford to buy a test kit, you know. The price varies, but it's a few ringgit each. And some people may not be able to afford to purchase a kit. Now, or is it because we have a message that says, oh, we have majority are stages 1 to 2, 97%, 95%. Only 1 to 2% are stages 3 to 4 or 5. But the problem is with that sort of categorization is that we forgot that this staging is a spectrum. A person can be in stage 1 today And in the a few hours later, he can moving on to stage 3, stage 4, and stage 5. So that messaging doesn't come across. Whilst I appreciate the need not to panic the population, I think we also have to inform the population that they have to be realistic. That if they are in stage 1 and 2, you've got to be careful. You can get on to stages 3, 4, and 5 in a short while.
Right. Dr. Lam, is that to do with kind of assessing personal risk, assessing health literacy on, say, the individual level? And I'm just wondering, if that is the case, then what can be done to increase the health literacy of, particularly if it's down to kind of personal responsibility now in an endemic phase, but also perhaps the role of your relationship with your GP, for instance?
Well, health literacy in Malaysia is very low. These are not my data. These are research data, and even from the Ministry of Health. Now, I think the minister may recall this. Some months ago, I had proposed to him to get the GPs to manage two things only, high blood pressure and diabetes. And by managing them and keeping their diabetes and high blood pressure under control, that would reduce greatly the workload in the Ministry of Health, hospitals and clinics. It will also reduce their risk of getting COVID. But to date, my GP friends tell me they have not seen any proposal of that sort of nature. Now, getting the message across is one thing, but making it easy for a patient who's diabetic or hypertensive to access the healthcare system is another thing.
Dr. Lam, I wonder if, you know, this comes back to this perennial problem of, you know, what lessons we have learned or rather not learned from the pandemic. A whole shift in thinking about our relationship to food, to sugar. You know, there's so much focus on, say, smoking and wanting to ban smoking outright. But, you know, sugar has played a huge role in the deterioration of public health. I mean, this is something got to give. I mean, what is it that we're not grappling with? I mean, when I say we, I mean the health authorities, but also we as Malaysians.
Well, you might like to know that we had a sugar subsidy until fairly recently, you know. And we all know that sugar isn't good for health. And why on earth we subsidize sugar until very recently is something that is beyond me. Now, Sharad, you raise a point. Not everything is within the health, within the health ministry. A lot of our things, health-wise, are in other ministries. Domestic trade, Ministry of Women, etc. No, but sugar doesn't come under the health ministry. Smoking, maybe it comes under the health ministry. But we have not addressed the big issue of non-communicable diseases in our country. It is not a pandemic, but it's certainly an epidemic. There are many people in our country who have non-communicable diseases. We are the fattest nation in the whole of ASEAN.
Very quick last question from me, Dr. Lam, before we have to wrap up the show. And I'm wondering, again, just looking at the kind of long-term effects of COVID and how that might impact our public health system. And I'm just wondering whether endemicity in this transition into endemicity should also take into account the public health effects of long COVID.
I think we should. I mean, I see some patients and my colleagues see more patients who have long COVID. And we have, to date, no mechanism to deal with long COVID. Some countries have started dedicated long COVID healthcare facilities, clinics mainly, to deal with long COVID. And this is something that we should, because we have just under 4 million or 3.8 million people who have had COVID. And if you just take 10% of them, it's 380,000. Or 390,000, not a small number. And that would also affect the country's economic performance.
Okay. Dr. Milton Lam, thank you so much for joining us on the show today, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.